Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. On recent programs, we have taken a look at increasing diversity in our community through the arts, and we have focused on branding this community in such a way as to make it attractive in retaining and luring young talent from diverse backgrounds. One program dealt with the regional business community's desire to attract immigrants and refugees because of their proven ability to boost a region's economy. Issues such as these are not lost on National Public Radio. NPR is currently working on a diversity initiative. The idea is to expand the depth of diversity in content, staff, audience, and its own workplace. Our guests in studio today are three men very much involved in this initiative: Keith Woods, NPR Vice President for Diversity and News and Operations; Doug Mitchell is a diversity strategist and project manager for the Pipeline Project, which he'll explain; and Louise Clemens, NPR Senior Editor for Diversity. Gentlemen, thanks so much for being with us. Nice to have you here.
Thank you. Good to be here.
My pleasure.
Keith, let me start with you. Can you give me kind of a thumbnail as to what this initiative is all about?
Well, I think actually I'd expand the definition beyond initiative, because this is frankly the way that we will operate as an organization. And it takes this very simple notion that to successfully look and sound like America, an organization like NPR has to do work constantly to bring greater diversity to its staff, to its audience, greater diversity to the content, greater diversity efforts at making a work environment that supports and nurtures that kind of diversity. Why? Because, in fact, as we start this in public radio, as with all media, we begin in a deficit. We begin with an organization that doesn't have the range and scope of people working for us and content that we're producing that looks and sounds like America. We may not be as far off as some, but the work is never ending, and it has to be done in parts.
It may not sound like America, but to many listeners, it sounds like the world. It seems like there's a great deal of diversity in terms of your personality.
Well, and that, of course, is the truth. I mean, there are parallel truths always to this issue of diversity, that, in fact, if you tune in to public radio locally, if you tune in to any of the national programming, you're going to hear an incredible range of stories and voices. It's in recognizing that to produce content that looks and sounds like America, you've got to be in all the nooks and crannies of this country. And that takes work, that takes effort.
Was there any particular kind of pressure put on the organization to do this?
No different pressure than that has always been on journalism to authentically reflect the lives of people. I would say that the arrival of two CEOs at NPR in succession who were dedicated to this work, it took a higher profile than maybe it has in years past. But the fact of the matter is, and one of the things that I realized in coming to NPR, is that there's a mountain of evidence that this issue has been in the DNA of public radio all along. How we get to the point that we are living our ideals and that we're achieving at the levels that we want to achieve, that takes work.
I'll ask the other gentleman this question, but I'll direct this first one at you with regard to how you're going about it.
Well, it again, in parts, you're really trying to eat an elephant, and you got to do it one tiny bite at a time. And so you recognize that in order to have a more diverse staff, it's not a matter of simply hiring people, which is an important piece of it. It's not just a matter of recruiting people, but it's a matter of building the pipeline that Doug will talk about, from the earliest connections to people and maintaining that forward. In the same way with content and in the things that you're hearing on the radio every day, you're listening, you're saying, who's here and who's not here? And as we answer that second question, a whole line of pursuit opens up for how you include more people, something that Luis talks about. And I would say in the one piece that's critical and a lot of organizations leave out, it is looking internally and saying, how do you create a place, whether you're public radio or anywhere else in this society, where the full range of diversity that you want and have can be nurtured, appreciated, and I would say included on a regular basis in what you're doing, so that it comes out of the radio, it comes off the off the computer looking and sounding like the diversity you're after.
Well, let me turn to Doug now. And Doug, give us this thing from your perspective, how you're going about it and what your objectives and strategies are.
Well, as I was joking with Keith yesterday that to tell my story would take up the whole hour. So I'll have to start at the beginning. And that is, I would say back in the 90s, we had two projects or two programs. One was external and one was internal. The internal one was called Intern Edition, where we had our interns do their own show. This started in 99, and they didn't have anybody to help them, so I raised my hand and said, oh, let me help you. And they were operating just across the hallway from where I was working on a show called Weekly Edition. And, of course, in not-for-profit media, when you raise your hand, it becomes your job. So I was already producing a show and did this additionally. So from 99 all the way until this year, three times a year, starting in 2003, the interns had an executive producer, a senior editor, staffing levels at or reflecting that of the shows that are broadcast out of NPR. Out of that, we have had people who either stay at the network or at stations. Some of them are Audie Cornish, who is co-hosting All Things Considered, Celeste Headlee, who is on Tell Me More and Weekend All Things Considered. At Marketplace, we've had Shireen Meraji and Eve Troe. If you hear those names, those people came out of the projects that I started back in 99. The external program we did at the Minority Journalism Conferences starting there, and then we expanded to specific stations around the country, geographically located in North Carolina, Texas, and California. So that having done this for so long and now have so many people in the system, that tells me that today that there are ways in which we can replicate this level of success and this process of finding people using, which is now social media, which makes things, I think, a lot easier, finding people, having them apply, putting projects together, and identifying the people that we want to have in the system, giving them some skills, and then nurturing them, whether it's at the network or with the station.
This is the Pipeline Project?
Yes. I think it's a 2.0 or 3.0 version of what I was doing at NPR for a very long time.
Did anybody ever tell you you have a pretty good voice for radio?
Well, the other thing is that I started out in college at the NPR station, and I'm an Oklahoma State grad. So this experience that I have now is based on my personal and professional experiences in college, and that is I had a news director. He yelled at us often. But he cared a lot about how we were learning and what we were learning. And so that experience I then parlayed into developing these projects.
All right. Well, radio is a home for you for sure. There's no
Absolutely.
Question about that.
Absolutely.
Luis, let me turn to you with regard to how you're coming at this whole thing.
Well, one thing I wanted to mention is actually radio has not been a home for me. I'm actually a newcomer to public radio. I'd never listened to NPR until 4 years ago, and that was the night before I was scheduled to be interviewed. And I'd been a professional journalist at that point for 20 years. And so when we're talking about the notion of our diversity work, we want to reach out to the audience that is not currently listening to us. Not everyone knows we exist. We are not talking to everyone. We are talking to an awful lot of people. And so my role is to try and find some of those voices and find some of those people that are not currently being featured or not some of the usual suspects that we hear often.
You know, we're talking here primarily about staff, but part of the whole diversity thing is the fact that covering issues that are really applicable to a diverse audience. Does the fact that you have a staff that is diverse ensure that these issues will be covered in such a...
It's not automatic. And certainly what I think is important to stress is that diversity is part of every journalist's work. If you're not reflecting the range, the breadth, the depth of your own community, of the beat that you cover, of the institutions that you cover, then you're not doing your job. And our mission in public media is to satisfy the curiosity of our listeners, of their need for information. And if we're not doing so in as broad a fashion as possible, we're failing in that mission.
Keith, how do you monitor the content aspect of this?
Well, I mean, we listen, right? I mean, mm-hmm. there are ways that you can, in some rudimentary ways count, how many different kinds of voices you're hearing and in what context you hear them, how many different story types you're providing. You know, a lot of people, I think, worry about that phenomenon, worry about the notion that if I'm counting, that I'm actually becoming obedient to the number, I'm becoming obedient to the count, and I'm losing my way in terms of my journalistic decision making. And I don't think those things are necessarily one. You know, they don't necessarily go hand in hand. The fact of the matter is that if I have some sense of how well or poorly I'm doing, I have some way of figuring out whether I'm doing better, staying the same, or getting worse over time. And so it's a matter of not just listening for last names, not just looking for faces on the website, but having some deeper sense of how involved, included people are in the content. Oh, you know, I'm a complex person myself. I don't say that as a compliment to myself. It's just a simple truth. I'm a black man. There are ways to talk to me about my life that might include the fact that I'm a black man and that has something to do with my life experience. I'm also a father. And there are many, many, many days in my life when there's nothing more important than the fact that I'm a father in the moment. Sometimes the fact that I'm a black man who is a father are relevant pieces of information. If you really included me in the full range, and I use me as an example, but if you included people in the full range of their experiences, then it's not just a matter of having a black man on the air every so often talking about what it's like to be black. It's also a matter of having a black man on the air talking about things that have nothing to do with matters of race. Similarly, having somebody who is female who is not always talking about gender issues and so on.
You know, maybe we ought to define diversity because it goes beyond just having a black or a Hispanic. I mean, there's diversity in gender. There's geographical diversity too. How would you define it, Keith?
Well, I think, in fact, that you'd have to write a paragraph, not a sentence, and not a word to define it. And we were just having this conversation a little earlier today that to me there isn't a single definition. And in fact, you can't really get at diversity by trying to do everything that would fall under the definition. Because, in fact, for each person, as I just demonstrated for you, there's a range of diversity within me that isn't possibly defined by any of those differences. But you would include some fairly significant differences, and I guess my own definition generally says that I am including people who are otherwise excluded. That's one of my definitions of diversity, which would allow me to talk about a range from geography to generation to age, or rather to gender to ethnicity and so on. I am looking for a definition that I can demonstrate action from, not simply passive words.
Before I take my break, Doug, do you have anything you would add to that definition?
I would say, again, back to my experiences of growing up. I grew up in Oklahoma, and I was used to being the only one. We've talked about the only one as being the only person of color in a newsroom, or I was in print and in radio. So I use that as an understanding of how to find and develop people and bring them into the system.
And how about you, Luis?
I think the key in terms of how I define diversity is the voices that are hiding in plain sight and are not heard enough.
All right. Well, we'll have to stop there. We'll take our first break and come back and continue our discussion. We are talking with Keith Woods, NPR Vice President for Diversity and News and Operations, Doug Mitchell, Project Manager for the Pipeline Project, about which you just heard, and Louise Clemens, NPR Senior Editor for Diversity. And what we're talking about is the diversity initiative that is being undertaken by NPR. These gentlemen are in St. Louis to talk to the staff here and spread the word, if you will. We'll come back, continue our conversation. And by the way, we'd like to bring you into it. What about the diversity issues that we're talking about? Do you believe that they are undercovered or overcovered by well, whoever you're hearing and watching these days. Back to continue the conversation, 382-8255 is the number. That's 382-TALK. You can also send us an email at talk at stlpublicradio.org. We will take a tweet at STL on Air. You can also reach us through Facebook. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again, and welcome back to our discussion of the NPR Diversity Initiative. And three gentlemen in studio are very closely involved with that. They're in St. Louis to talk about it with the staff here and whoever else is desirous of listening to the message they have. Keith Woods is NPR Vice President for Diversity and News and Operations. Doug Mitchell, Project Manager for the Pipeline Project. Also with us is Louise Clemens, NPR Senior Editor for Diversity. You know, we're talking about the radio, but one of the things we've noticed here, and I know you gentlemen are familiar with, is that there aren't that many people listening to programs like this on the radio anymore. They're listening to it on their iPad. They're listening to it on their iPhone, whatever device they might be carrying with them. So how are you extending what you're doing and what your objectives are to this world, this social media or whatever we would desire to call it?
I'd say a couple things. I mean, part of the work we do as part of this effort is work with stations. And one of the key things that we're doing is helping different reporters and different newsrooms figure out how to use social media to identify new voices to talk to, how to mine those sources for information. Because what's happening? You've got conversations that used to be happening only in certain neighborhoods or in certain places that you didn't necessarily have access to, now are happening in public. And you can read that, watch that, tap into that, and take advantage of it.
And you're doing that, Doug?
And part of what I'd say, mostly what I do, like, for example, every morning, my read-in, we used to, you know, flip the newspaper and go through and clip and use scissors and clip them out and go to the meeting. My read-in is on Twitter. And so I bring up my tweet deck and I look and I see what people are talking about. And that's all very instantaneous. It's all very rapid. And then I look on my Facebook wall and I see news feed and see what other people are talking about. And that's where a lot of the people are. So we have to be where they are. In order to bring them into the system, you have to be engaged, like Louise says, in the conversations that are these are on a computer, they're coming from somebody's neighborhood and they're talking about things that we are interested in terms of content, but also in terms of staffing.
And central to this, Don, is this piece of information that if you're trying to bring greater diversity to your content, to your audience, including younger people. The fact is that they oversample in social media in the digital age, and so your audience is there. If you're African American or Latino, you're using your mobile devices as a primary computing device at a much greater level than anybody else. And so at this moment, using these tools is not just the newest thing to do. It is in fact one of the wisest things to do. To reach that audience, we have a fairly substantial audience in our radio who's listening to us on terrestrial radio. We're not looking for that to go away tomorrow. But even as we continue down that road, the people who are listening to their radio with earbuds in their ears and holding a phone in their hand are a great audience opportunity for us that we can seize if we simply use these tools you're talking about.
Do you have any sense of what percentage of your audience is younger, under 30, the millennials, if you will?
Well, I think that for public radio more broadly, that we're looking in excess of 60% of our audience, and I would say probably significantly more than that, who are 40, 45 and older. Public radio's average audience age is somewhere around 51 or 52, and as we continue on, and that audience as our most loyal audience ages, our challenge is to grow the younger audience. And again, this is a great way of doing it.
Right. Anyone want to add to that before I have one other question before I go to the phones? Is there any danger in what you're doing of getting into a quota situation? Of finding yourself, gee, we have to maintain a certain level for whatever group that we're talking about. Is that something you think about, or is it an issue?
Well, I think it's a danger only if you stop thinking. That to me is evidence of a failure of creativity and imagination. When you are finding the most creative ways to bring these new voices in, some of the ways that Luis has explained, or some of the new people, and in some of the ways that Doug has explained, you achieve the diversity that you're after without having to set a specific number that then becomes your problem. Because here's, to me, the biggest challenge. In the city of St. Louis, where 49% of your population is African-American, how many African-Americans would represent diversity in the station? Well, depending upon how you parse that audience, it could be your whole staff plus 200 more people before you've reached the diversity of the audience that resides in that 49%. That's not what we're trying. We're not trying here to hit some kind of artificial goal. We are trying to have a qualitative diversity of content and staff that demonstrates to the people who are listening that we know who they are and how their lives are being are running every day.
Luis, go ahead.
I'll mention one thing. I mean, I remember I was working at All Things Considered, and we booked a Latina architect who was a professor at some university. And we received a note from a listener saying, "Thank God this is the first time I heard a Latina with an accent who was not talking about immigration." That notion of it's a different person talking about something that is solidly in the mainstream. I'll give you another example. Recently, we wanted to cover something about the World Series of Poker. Well, the best man for the job was a Latino reporter at the Associated Press. There's no known Hispanic angle to poker, not that I know of. But it was just nice to hear him talk about something that was not specific to the community, that was of general interest.
Doug, anything to add?
I would say just in terms of searching, I've always believed that public radio is public. That means everybody. And so there are criteria that we have in terms of hiring people. They have to meet certain experience levels at NPR, and even at stations there are certain experience levels you want. But the search is wide. The search is open. And we want to at least expose as many different people as possible to who we are and what it is we're doing.
Let's go to the phones, and I think this is a good time to bring in January. She is calling from North St. Louis. And January, thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to say, first of all, that the point about how many people don't listen to NPR, I'm a black woman, and I've listened to it since I was a little kid with my mother and my grandmother and grandfather. And I'm 30 years old now, so, hey, I'm part of that segment you were talking about. We're out there. I just turned 30. But it was a good point because I just assume everybody knows about NPR. Everybody who wants to listen does listen, but maybe everybody doesn't. And I also wanted to make a comment. You all have a show on NPR, News and Notes with Michelle Martin, and I kind of assumed, I kind of lumped that with this kind of diversity initiative that you're trying to have this more diverse programming. And I actually love News and Notes. It is the one thing out of my very busy day, because I have married with four children, that I will go to my car just to listen to, along with, Talk of the Nation, because I like that too. But I would like to say thank you on that point. But there's one segment on News and Notes that's called Barbershop. And kind of to the point that the gentleman was just making about this kind of pigeonholed or kind of just targeted diversity where you've got the Latinos only talk about Latinos, quote-unquote, issues. Well, I like Barbershop, but I kind of don't like it because why do we have to be in a barbershop? We're everywhere. We talk about things in all kinds of places. And that's my comment. Thank you.
January, we thank you for that. Well,
let me work backwards right. Because I think that the beauty of Tell Me More, this is Michelle Martin's show, the beauty of this show is that it is about the things that are going on in the country and the world. And the people who are delivering that information to you will be I would say, the single most racially and ethnically diverse group that you will hear from in a public radio show. But it isn't a show about diversity. And I think that that's an important distinction to make. January talked about the barbershop, and I think it's an interesting question about where you locate that show, or rather that segment. But the fact of the matter is that the beauty salon, the moms, the barbershop, these pieces that you will hear over the course of the of the week on Tell Me More are all about locating the conversation where people have conversations. And the conceit of that is essentially borrowing from something that people generally know well, that if you're sitting in a barbershop, that's when you discuss the world. Mm-hmm. That's when it's a freewheeling conversation, and that's the structure that's created for. And I, you know, I think on the matter of people not knowing about public radio, it again is a huge opportunity for us as local stations and as a national organization, that if you assume that what people want is smart, thoughtful, engaging, civil discourse around important issues, and that is not specific to any particular group, then really one of our biggest challenges is simply tapping people on the shoulder, whether we are doing that on terrestrial radio or on the iPod, and letting them know that we're here may be one of the biggest achievements that we will make in diversifying our audience and our content.
Again, I go back to the numbers game. Do you have any sense with regard to audience breakdown? You gave me the 60% number a little while ago. But what are you learning about the diversity of your audience?
Well, the audience for and again, I'm going to talk in large swaths, and, sure. and it's different across public radio. But for NPR, we're looking at an audience that's about 80% white, with the African-American, Latino, Asian, Native American, other groups kind of clumped into that other 20%. And it varies differently across public radio. I think we learned today that the African-American listenership for St. Louis Public Radio is somewhere around 15% at its top.
For a community where in the city itself the population is about 49%, but 15% is probably about right for the region.
Right, maybe a little range. Lower, a little lower for the region population wise, but higher than you would get in other public radio stations around the country.
Well, geography would make a huge difference.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just want to add one thing about my parents were public radio listeners. My parents are from New Orleans. My dad loves jazz. The only place to really find it was on the public radio station. So it was on. Even as a teenager, I didn't like it, but it was on. And so I think that's how it all started. And I think she's totally right. I think there are lots of people out there that we don't know about who are actually consumers of public media.
Anything, Luis?
I wanted to thank January for listening. And I wanted to say, you keep that radio on for those four kids because, frankly,
yes.
that is how part of the way organically we grow our audience.
Exactly.
And I have two daughters, 9 and 4, and for the first time, that 9-year-old laughed the other day while listening to NPR, and I thought, gotcha.
It's amazing how many people we hear from who say that they grew up listening to NPR as their parents were taking them to school, daycare, whatever the case might be.
Well, sure, but you have in Luis and I two people who didn't have that experience at all. Exactly. Our children absolutely do, but it tells you a lot about what's possible for us. Mm-hmm. I wasn't a non-listener because I'd made a choice not to listen. It simply was that I didn't know until I got a chance to tune in. And frankly, it was Garrison Keillor from A Prairie Home Companion that brought me into public radio. And then I found NPR from there.
Yeah, he's brought in more than a few over the years, hasn't he? Let's go back to the phones and bring in Barbara calling from Maryland Heights. Barbara, thank you for waiting. Go ahead, please.
Oh, thank you so much. And it's a pleasure talking with all of you. I'm an NPR member and an avid listener, as is my 28-year-old daughter. So we do come across multiple generations. But I just thought it was interesting and sort of a fun anecdote to share that when I first heard, Don, what your topic was going to be today, you immediately introduced us to gentlemen, and you said, welcome all gentlemen. It's so good to have you here. And I thought, that's not diversity.
Uh-huh.
Where's the woman? So I think it just points to how subtle and insidious non-diversity is, and that we all have to be so aware because it shows up a lot more than we might recognize. And I guess that's what I wanted to share is I love the show and the points that have been made are excellent, but it's just food for thought.
Thank you so much for the call, Barbara. Let's get the gentleman to respond to that.
Well, you know, it makes a point that we've been talking a lot about, and that is that there is no moment when you're done. We are three men, and that means that there are no women sitting here now. We're two black men and a Latino, which means that there's no Asian man or woman sitting with us, no Native Americans, none of the broader range of diversity. What I think that we have to recognize is that it is always imperfect. It is always incomplete. And what I want to be able to say to anyone, this caller and everyone else, at the end of my work is that I never stopped trying to expand beyond where I was at the moment. And I'll take a ding every so often when it's not diverse enough for anybody, knowing that tomorrow there's a better chance that I'm going to have a greater achievement at this than I did today.
And I'll just add that over the years of doing the Next Generation Project and Intern Edition at NPR, that I recognized that colleges were increasing numbers of women who were going to college. I think it's up like 60-40% now.
It's pretty high, yeah.
Yes, it's very. And those who are interested in public radio, those percentages, it was even higher numbers of women who were interested. And I think we are, at least of the people I count as mentees, there are more and more women and women of color who I've had in executive producer positions and groomed and worked with many over the years. And so we recognized the numbers have changed. And like Keith said, the work is never complete.
No one can listen to NPR without being struck by the number of women who are on the air. I mean, it's virtually all of the foreign correspondents, with certain exceptions, are females in some of the toughest spots in the world. News readers, newscasters, so many of them are women. I don't think that could be a criticism that anyone could make listening to NPR.
No, but one criticism that is fair is that when it comes to interviewing subject matter experts, it is in favor, the numbers are in favor of the men. The last time this number was looked at was, I think, 2 years ago, and I forget what the exact results were, but it favored men, and that point is fair.
I thought that's where Barbara was going to go, actually, because I know there has been some criticism in terms of using female experts, going to people who have particular expertise in subject areas. Almost invariably, it seems to be men.
It's lopsided in favor of men. And, you know, nowadays, if the subject is national security, this is very different from 20 years ago. The number of female national security experts, you've got plenty to choose from. It's no longer an issue of not finding people. They're out there.
Plenty to choose from. The issue is start choosing them, right?
That's right.
Okay, let's take another break. We'll do that. We're talking about the NPR Diversity Initiative. With me in studio, Keith Woods. He's the NPR Vice President for Diversity and News Operations. Doug Mitchell is with us, Project Manager for the Pipeline Project. And you just heard from Louise Clemens, NPR Senior Editor for Diversity. 382-8255 is our number. We'd love to have you give us a call and get into this conversation. Diversity issues, you believe, are overcovered, undercovered, other issues relating to this topic. Happy to hear from you. 382-8255 is the number. Email us at talk@stlpublicradio.org. You can send us a tweet at STL on air or reach us through Facebook. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back to our conversation as we continue to discuss the diversity initiative currently being conducted by NPR. I think all of us are of an age where we can remember the day in broadcasting where the black reporter was sent out, if there was one, was sent out to cover stories in the black neighborhoods. The female reporter was sent out to cover the flower show, and the white guys got everything else. That certainly has changed. But here we have an email from Tanya, I believe is the way it's pronounced. If you hire a minority to do a minority-themed focus show in odd time slots rather than hosting prime-time staple shows, diversity sometimes comes off as fulfilling stereotypes of the audience and often may not broaden horizons. I think it's better to hire qualified, talented minorities to host general shows. By the way, this is an aside, I think it's crazy that minority moderators were not utilized in the presidential debates. What about that? Are sometimes as we talk about diversity, the people who are diverse get hidden and more unpopular time slots?
Well, I think if you look at specifically All Things Considered, the afternoon news magazine show, Drive Time, important as all get out. Michelle Norris is one of the regular hosts. She's on leave right now. Her replacement is a young woman, Audie Cornish. Both are African-American. So I think as far as NPR goes, there's presence both in terms of the mainstream headline shows, if you will, as well as shows that satisfy and spend much more time each show, each day, on issues that are of interest to specific communities.
You know, I had the opportunity a year or so ago, when Michelle Norris was in here promoting her book, to moderate an event on which she was promoting the book. And I have to tell you, you talk about diversity. This was a wonderful audience, and I think it's testimony to the kind of thing we're talking about here. The crowd that she drew was just, it's exactly what you would want in any kind of demographic model that you might have.
And I think that one of the lessons to draw from that is that the subject matter actually cut across the racial and ethnic makeup of the city. Everybody had something to say about what Michelle was talking about, right, with race card. But if I can say one more thing to this point, you know, we often paint ourselves into this false choice of either having the person of color reporting only on the general, whatever that means, news, or having the people covering news specific to their group. And I think that there is the correct way of thinking about that is both and. That we need, in fact, the time and energy that you can spend to elevate the issues that are important to communities that get lost in the general. And if you're not doing that, then you know, I'm a perpetual minority. My issues never reach eye level if we're going by my numbers. And if you're a Native American in this country and you simply covered Native Americans based on their population size, we'd never hear about them. So there is some reason to focus down on the coverage. On whether it's African-American who covers African-American or not, I think that, again, there are parallel truths. There are things that an African-American can bring to that coverage, or someone who is Vietnamese can bring to the coverage of people who are Vietnamese that other people cannot. But it's not everything. And what we show every day in the coverage at NPR, what you show every day at St. Louis Public Radio, is that there are people who are capable of using the strength of reporting tools to dig down and bring out the authentic stories of other people, regardless of whether they have a hell of a lot in common with them or nothing at all.
Things are changing. I was interested in noticing today in a couple of sources the amount of space given to the obituary for Russell Means, for instance. Not too awfully long ago, that would have been relegated to a paragraph, if that. But this was extensive. I'll just say it was at least as much as Andy Williams got, which, for instance, just as an aside. And to further make your point, we have a tweet here. It says, people really don't know each other across races, social strata, economic status. Public media can facilitate the conversation, which is what this conversation is all about. Let's return to the phones, and I'd like to bring in Tom now. He's calling from Afton. Tom, thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Thank you. I'd like to offer a comment about class diversity. I remember growing up, I'm a daily listener now in my 40s, but growing up I would turn on NPR and just find it really annoying. And I realize now that the NPR news shows, you know, that come out of Washington especially, just have a very, you know, sort of educated East Coast and very Beltway affluent perspective. Now we have shows like Marketplace, which doesn't assume that everybody out there is, you know, has investments for the last three generations. But it reminds me of a story. A friend of mine from high school who's African American was volunteering with Big Brother, Big Sister or something, and he went to a housing project to meet with the children he was helping, dressed in his work clothes and khakis and blue Oxford shirt. And they told him, "You white." You know, and I think that, you know, one way of appealing to a broader part of the public is not only to have people who look like me, as we say, but also, you know, share our class perspective. And I think that's really something that that NPR could work on, and you reach many different ethnic groups when you have a broader class perspective. Thanks.
Tom, thanks for the call. That's certainly one of the challenges, particularly with a national organization, given the kinds of different areas that you're reaching. Did you want to respond to that, Keith?
Well, I think that you have to first recognize, and this to me is one of the big challenges of diversity, that who you are and what you bring to work with you every day is having some influence on what you find interesting, which stories you are more attracted to or not, which sources you're more attracted to or not, and that has consequence for us. We know as an organization that there is both a reputational challenge of being seen as, in fact, some of the things that the caller just described, East Coast-centric, Beltway-centric, upper-middle-class-centric, hyper-educated-centric. All of those things may at times be true of NPR. We know from our own research that we could reach more people by making our sound more accessible, and accessible in this case means having people find themselves in the stories that we're telling. But the rest of our truth is that if it turns you off to hear about somebody who is really different from you or doesn't share your dimension of diversity, then that's a challenge in a national program that's trying to represent the swath of America and the world that NPR tries to represent.
Well, there's the urban audience, there's the suburban audience, and there's the rural audience. Let's bring in Barbara, who is calling from Franklin County, which is a little bit more rural than urban, and see what she has to say. Go ahead, Barbara.
Yeah, I have to own that. But I am from St. Louis, and connecting with the previous caller, I really appreciated that the universities kind of typically provided homes for public radio across the country, and appreciated UMSL for that. But I think it's brilliant that you have moved now into the Arts Center in the middle of the city, because I think there is something about a university campus that kind of automatically selects and its followers. And even though they don't intend that, I think this is wonderful that we are now really in the middle of the city and part of it, and I think more and more people will take ownership of it. That's
well,
all.
Barbara, we think it's wonderful that you think it's wonderful. and it is wonderful for those of us who...
We were there for your opening and loved it, so...
All righty. Well, thank you so much. Anybody
sure.
need to respond?
Well, the thing I was going to just piggyback on what Keith was saying, and that is we, in this project, are looking at what are events, places, locations, geographies do we need to go? Where do we need to be? I mentioned earlier about being where the people are, and I spend a lot of time on social media because I know a lot of people are there. But I think, to expand on diversity, we have to physically show up in places that we ordinarily might not go. We have that conversation almost every week. Where should we be? And I think every network, station, journalist, company needs to think about where are our consumers and where are our consumers that we might get and we just don't go.
Okay, let's move along. I have a very interesting email here. It's somewhat lengthy but interesting point. NPR has no place for Americans who are sincere members of groups that do favor racial and gender diversity and inclusiveness, but do not favor and actually oppose liberalism in other ways and promote what might be called ideological unity rather than diversity in values and beliefs. In short, NPR won't, can't hire or regularly report on people who are conservative Republicans or conservative Jews, Christians or Muslims. These people make up somewhere between half to one-third of America. It's a lot of people, but they are not represented well on NPR. You hear this a lot.
It's a comment you hear often. And I would push back on a couple of things. I received a tweet the other day from a conservative who said, how many of the people in the newsroom do you think will vote for Governor Romney? The answer, of course, is I don't know. I've not heard anyone in the newsroom say, I'm going to vote for one candidate or another. So, I mean, part of this is how much do people bring to the table and are willing to own as journalists about their own political beliefs? The other thing is, I would say, when you look at the coverage of the debates and the coverage we do of the election, we go pretty far in terms of an effort of making sure we're covering the range of opinions out there, both in terms of the main parties and some of the minor candidates as well.
Do you buy into anything that has been mentioned in this email?
Well, I'll only speak for myself, and that is I'm from Oklahoma, which
You've
is not
mentioned that.
It's not liberal America. My family's there. I make sure that in my social networks that I sample all opinions. I have a rule on my wall that there's no cursing. Facebook wall, but you can say what you want. I want people to say what they want, and I have a wide range. But that's for me. I want to know what other people think outside of what my own views may be.
I would add, you know, that I mean, my boss would want me to say this at this point, that we have instruction from Gary Noe to think about diversity at NPR in a way that includes ideological diversity, geographic diversity, generational diversity, race and ethnicity, all of those kinds of things. You can't, in a journalistic organization, interview somebody and ask them what political party they belong to. How we define where the line is between a liberal and a conservative, I'm not sure. From my own life, I couldn't possibly successfully draw that line, even in my own family, you know, in a way that would be truly definitional. I think that if the measure of our journalism every day is by how inclusive we are in opinions, by how fair we are in treating the people from whom we seek those opinions, I think that we will be judged well by people across that political spectrum.
And Don, I would add just quickly one thing, and that is, you know, if anyone out there in terms of a different ideological view feels that their view is not getting represented, you know, reach out to NPR. We read our email. We answer our phones. I mean, we respond to people. And if there are specific stories, specific ideas, names, let's hear them.
Time is starting to get away, but I do want to bring Rashad in because he raises an issue once again that we hear a lot, and I'm sure you do too. So, Rashad, go ahead, but make it quick, please.
Okay. Talk about the Palestinian situation, but on that situation when he talks about the ideology, and he was when Dan Rather said that when he was at CBS, he discovered that lobbyists were dictating to the newsroom how they should report, what news they should report, and how they should report it. But in regards to the Palestinian situation, there's a lack of a publication or a dissension of dissemination of the cultural life of Palestinians or Muslims, et cetera, et cetera. It seems like we believe in a zero-sum game, that if we report something about the Palestinians, that's going to take away from Israel. But that's not the case. I don't know if you just Google the amount of times that you or something appears on the national scene in the media about the Jews, about the Holocaust, about the Jewish cooking, et cetera, et cetera, da, 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 da. I mean, it's almost infinitum, you know, but you hardly ever hear anything about the cultural side of Palestinians or Muslims, anything like that. I know you're out of time, but just wanted to make those comments, and I thank you for listening.
I would encourage the caller to check out our ombudsman's column, because there you will find a regular feature that is a critique of our coverage of the Middle East, and particularly our coverage of Palestinian-Israeli stories.
We only have a minute left, and it's unfair to really ask a question of any depth with that little time, but you're traveling around the country, and very quickly, what have you learned so far that has surprised you about what you're doing?
Well, I guess the number of people who are looking for a way to do this work better. Surprise maybe is too strong of a word for what I've found, but it's absolutely refreshing and invigorating to find across the country that people really do want to do that kind of improvement.
And I would use the word encouraged to find that, and that they're looking for pathways.
And Luis?
The range of diversity. I met with someone from a station in Washington who said, for us, diversity is physicists living next door to farm workers.
All right. We'll end it on that note. I want to thank you, gentlemen, so much for being with us. Our subject has been the Diversity Initiative being conducted by NPR. With me in studio has been Keith Woods, NPR Vice President for Diversity in News and Operations, Doug Mitchell, Project Manager for the Pipeline Project, and Luis Clemens, NPR Senior Editor for Diversity. By the way, this reminder, a reminder that you can find more information about the current election cycle at beyondnovember.org. It's a collaboration of St. Louis Public Radio, the St. Louis Beacon, and the Nine Network of Public Media. Tomorrow in St. Louis on the Air, we'll continue our election coverage by talking with Ed Martin, the Republican candidate for Missouri Attorney General, and with Bill Enyart, the Democratic candidate for the Illinois 12th District Congressional seat. Archived versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.